Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, final hour of the show brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 and up and in Tennessee to bet. Okay, quick scoreboard update before we get to Chad Withrow. Let's see if we get Chad online. We should have him in just a moment. Northwestern continues to lead Florida Atlantic 56-50, 4:20 to go in the second half of that one. San Diego State leads UAB 18-13, about midway through the first. Marquette underway against Western Kentucky 5-5, about 2.5 minutes in. Baylor continues to be in control of the 14 seed Colgate 59-42. All right, Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. Caroline on vacation. She'll be back on Monday. Chad Withrow, Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow. We talk to his colleague Jonathan Hutton every Wednesday on the show. And we are consulting Chad to see what's going on here. First of all, Chad, are you a fan of hash brown casserole? Because Derek Mason right now is testing it out for the first time and liking what he's tasting here.
First off, Willie D, it's great to hear your voice and be on with you. Second, I am a huge advocate of hash brown casserole. I'm so much an advocate of hash brown casserole that my go-to order at Waffle House is hash brown casserole scattered, smothered, covered, and chunked little chunks of bits of ham in it. And I do something a little unconventional. I don't know if D-Mace does this also, but I douse it with ketchup. And people think I'm crazy for it, and I'm thinking, well, do you dip your fries in ketchup? Because it's all potatoes. It all stems from the potato, right? Yep. So it's great with ketchup.
I'm sure it would be. I'm more of a hot sauce person on something like this. Now, if it was just, you know, from fries, ketchup, no doubt. Or mustard and mayo together, then dip your ketchup in. Meaning dip your fry in. But with this, I could see a little hot sauce on there. I don't know if you ever traveled down that road, but hot sauce is good on this.
We got into this debate before.
I'm way too big of a wimp to try hot sauce. I'm not a hot, spicy guy. I know that shocks everyone. No. I'm way more ketchup than hot sauce, unfortunately for me.
So D-Mace had never had the hash brown casserole. I'm a huge hash brown guy, but so a listener of ours, Wes, just dropped by about a month's supply of hash brown casserole. So everybody in the station today, if they want hash brown casserole, yes, we got you covered.
Well, I'm hungry now.
Okay, so Chad, you just need to come by.
Accomplished to get making me hungry. I'm starving for hash brown casseroles at this point.
All right, Chad, you as a Tennessee graduate, I'm sure we're taking note of Kentucky getting beat by Oakland last night, and apparently Lexington is burning down along with half of the state. So just what were your thoughts when you saw that happen?
My first thought was, this might actually be it for John Calipari.
Really?
And I didn't think that going in, right? And I thought, okay, if it's an early exit, it's going to look really bad for him just because he's really not adjusting. And there continues to be, Willie, this sort of banging his head up against the wall to try to explain things away by simply, oh, my players didn't make shots and I'm getting great players and look at all these NBA draft picks, while not adjusting to the game right now. He's not, I mean, Reeves was a great addition. There's no doubt about it. And he did see a couple of years ago that there is a benefit to having an older team, but then even that team loses in the first round of the tournament to St. Peter's with Oscar Tshiebwe and everyone else. So I don't think John Calipari's adjusting, but last night was the first time I actually allowed myself to think they may actually get rid of John Calipari, even though he has a $33 million buyout and a lifetime contract. That's the first time I allowed my mind to go there. I don't know what they're going to do ultimately, but you look at his tournament, the lack of tournament success in both SEC and NCAA tournament in the 2020s, I saw a hilarious graphic that said Fairleigh Dickinson and Oral Roberts have one more NCAA tournament win than Kentucky does in the 2020s in this decade. That tells you a lot about where this Kentucky program has fallen.
Yeah, it's frustrating, I'm sure, for those fans. We know how hungry they are. I do wonder if John Calipari looks at the future of college basketball, because it is, with the NIL and transfers, the formula has changed so much, right? You do need to have, and this is where Tennessee, I think, has put themselves in good position, older players, especially if you can keep them together for longer, there's a huge benefit. I don't care how great your recruiting class is.
Yeah, I think Tennessee's a good example, Willie, because they really found the formula. You know, a year ago, they were a good team, but not really great. They had one really good second half against Duke. They get themselves to the Sweet 16. But that was a defensive team, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, last, everything. They had no offense. They were a great defensive team that they would go through 7-8 minute scoring droughts and couldn't solve people defensively on the other end. So they go out now, Dalton Knecht, a fifth-year guy who's a one-and-done on the other end, the reverse of the John Calipari one-and-done as a high school senior, going to be a freshman and then go to the NBA. Tennessee gets the guy on the end that turns out to be better than anyone could have imagined, and they've set themselves up well where as long as most of those guys come back, they're going to be really old again next year with the ability to go add a guy or two in the transfer portal that's older, that is a known, proven scorer to add to the mix. I think that's the formula that John Calipari should look at. I know after the game, he kind of said in passing, oh, maybe I should add a guy or two that's a veteran player to the team next year. But we may not need to also because we're going to be so talented again with the second best recruiting class in the country coming in next year. I don't think John Calipari's figured it out. I think Rick Barnes has in terms of the formula for what he needs in his program. And if Calipari continues, this may be it for him, but if it's not, he's got to adjust. And he has not done a good enough job of doing that in the last few seasons.
Yeah, I think that is a great point. So you just said it about Tennessee. We've all been curious because they've been good. Now you have Knecht. Certainly last night it had to be a relief to all Tennessee fans because the game was over at the halftime. There was no business of you're in trouble against the 15th seed. I look at their draw. It looks pretty doable. So what are your thoughts on the chances for Tennessee to make the deep run everybody wants?
Well, my first thought was when Kentucky lost, I started immediately getting texts from my Tennessee friends that were, you know, going crazy and bragging about Kentucky losing. And I'm thinking, hey, guys, Tennessee's got a little game against a certain St. Peter's program that everyone remembers from a couple of years ago. So let's take care of business first before getting too excited about Kentucky losing. And take care of business is exactly what Tennessee did in that game. They were far better. St. Peter's is a team that got hot in their conference tournament. I think they finished fifth in that MAAC conference. And Tennessee did what they needed to do as a superior team and looked really good in doing so. Willie, I'm with you. I like their matchups moving forward. I will say, and we'll probably talk a little bit more about the next matchup, this Texas game is eerily similar to Michigan a couple years ago, where Michigan gets in as an 11 seed. They win their first game. They beat Tennessee and that Kennedy Chandler team in the second round. That was an underachieving Michigan team that was super talented with Hunter Dickinson and some of the players on that team. They beat Tennessee to get to the Sweet 16. I kind of feel the same way about this Texas team. With Abemus and Dylan Dessou and some of those guys, they underachieve most of the year. They are talented enough to get the job done. You see that with Tennessee only being, I think, a six-point favorite in this game. But I don't think it's a terrible matchup for the Vols. And this team has everything it takes to go on a deep run. Are they going to be the first ever Tennessee team to get this program to their first ever Final Four? Time will tell, but I think you've got three things that you know you have going into every game. I think that Dalton Knecht is going to be fine, and he's going to get his points. I think that Zakai Ziegler is going to come through in some big moments, and he's going to have the courage and toughness to make some big plays. And I think Jonas Adu can be pretty reliable in the post. The two big X factors for this team are the super seniors, Santiago Vescovi and Josiah Jordan James. Those guys are lost offensively right now. It was a good sign to see Vescovi bury a couple open threes last night. Josiah Jordan James remains lost. He took two shots all night, didn't hit any of them, did not score. If those guys can figure something out, I'm not talking about going off for 15 or 20 points. If they could combine for three threes between the two of them in a game, that completely changes Tennessee's outlook. Because they're going to start doubling Knecht. They're going to see more and more junk defenses. And those guys are going to get open looks. They've got to bury some open looks if Tennessee's going to advance as far as they can.
We'll talk with Chad Withrow, host of Hot Mic with Hutt and Withrow. Now, Chad, after yesterday game, they pretty much handled business, the Vols. But, you know, as you move on to the second round and thus rounds after that, it gets a little bit harder. Is there, and you just talked about some of the things that maybe could be a concern because, you know, Knecht was on last night and, you know, some of the other guys didn't have to really, you know, pitch in a lot. This is just a dominant performance by UT. But is there something that could possibly, you know, rear its ugly head moving forward. I saw that they had 15 turnovers yesterday. Now, listen, again, they beat, you know, St. Peter's down. But when you start to move on in the tournament, those turnovers and those possessions are going to be critical moving forward.
Yeah, D-Mace, I think it's two factors. One, we saw rear its ugly head a bit last night, but they were so far ahead it didn't matter. They were not good at the free throw line. And missing free throws the way they did last night, that could cost you in a game like Saturday against Texas. The other factor to me, and I've heard Dane Bradshaw on SEC Network talk about this, and I think he nailed it when he said it, Tennessee still has this psyche about them where offensive woes become very contagious very quickly. We saw it in the game against South Carolina and Knoxville, their only loss at home this year, earlier this season. I was watching the broadcast, and Dane Bradshaw said, this is a team that at times will look like they've never played with each other or practiced with each other.
I agree with that. That's an interesting way of putting it.
Yeah, and we saw it in Nashville. I was there at the game against Mississippi State. Same thing. They were forcing it. They weren't calling fouls on Mississippi State early. Tennessee got bothered by that. They're driving into traffic. Mississippi State's getting more physical with them. They're taking the ball away. They're getting run outs the other way. And then even when the Vols would get open shots, they'd miss it. They're one of the more contagiously bad offensive shooting teams I've seen that would also label as a great college basketball team, right? Everyone has this ability to go in spurts where they can't hit anything. We've been watching it with FAU, who's a great offensive team this morning, you know, during their game. So it happens to everyone. But Tennessee has truly great potential. They also have awful potential that when a few guys start missing open looks, it feels like everyone misses it. I felt that way last night at the free throw line. They're contagiously bad at the free throw line. So those are the two things to watch out for. Now, if they play defense the way they did last night and the way they're capable of, they could even survive a bad offensive performance and win a close, low-scoring game. They have the defensive ability to do that, but I'm watching free throws, and I'm watching the psyche of this team when a couple of their star players starts to miss open looks and it starts to bleed over into every player on the roster. That's what could kill this team in the tournament.
Do they have the depth on the bench to make a deep run? Now, we know their starting five is damn good, led by Connect. But as you move further down in the tournament, you're going to need a bench to help you if indeed the starters have trouble scoring.
I'm glad Awaka was okay. You know, he went out with a knee injury last night, and there was some speculation that maybe he was really badly hurt. He was, and he came back in the game. So that would have been a big one for Tennessee because they're going to get in foul trouble. Mm-hmm. Between Adu and Awaka, if they're going to go on a run in the tournament, they're going to have a game. Maybe it's against Texas where they're in foul trouble. So I think Awaka off the bench is very important. I think Jordan Ganey is the ultimate X factor off the bench. He's a guy who can heat up from three and bail Tennessee out. He's a guy who can also shoot you out of the game, and he's going to keep shooting. He's not afraid, and that can be good. That can be bad for Tennessee. I'll be honest. I want to see more Jemai Mashak over Josiah Jordan James. And I love what James has brought to the Tennessee program and all the intangibles that he's brought to the table for this team. But if he's going to be this lost offensively, I don't understand playing him over Mashak the minutes they've been playing him over Mashak, because Mashak is capable of hitting an open corner three. Mashak is capable in a late clock situation to break someone down one-on-one and go get a bucket. And Josiah Jordan James simply cannot do that right now. So to answer your question, D-Mace, I'd like to see more Mashak off the bench and maybe even starting at some point in this tournament from what I've seen so far. But I think their bench is fine. I don't think it's going to be an issue for them. I also don't think it's some gigantic strength.
Let's ask this to Chad. What do you think of the actual matchup with Texas? People will be familiar with Dylan Dessou, who played 2 or 3 years at Vanderbilt. He's been in college forever. He's one of those five. He fits it right in with Josiah Jordan James and Santiago Vescovi. They've played five consecutive years of college basketball. He's good. I forget how to pronounce the other kid's name, Max. It's not how it's spelled.
It's Abemus, I think. That's how they were pronouncing it last night when I was watching the game. Abemus.
But he's a guy that has the ball a lot. I've watched him play. He will take some crazy shots, but he can make them. But I kind of like Tennessee's defense against a guy like that. Also, I look at Texas's on the KenPom inability to rebound. I think Tennessee can exploit them. They can get some second chance points. That's a good fallback if they're not making the shots. But what do you think of the matchup?
I think exactly what you said there, the last part, Willie, and that is Tennessee should have a big-time rebounding advantage in this game. Now, I know last night a lot of it was because St. Peter's couldn't hit anything, but Tennessee had was plus 26 on the boards in that game against St. Peter's. They don't have the same advantage against Texas, but they've got a pretty sizable advantage with Adu down low. And if they decide to go big with Adu and Awaka, which they've done in the past, I think Awaka is one of the best offensive rebounders. If you look at all the KenPom metrics of percentage of shots he gets off the offensive glass, one of the best offensive rebounders in the country when he's in the game. So I think there's going to be some second chance points for Tennessee. Don't fall in love with the three. The one guy you want falling in love with the three, if he's hitting early, is Dalton Knecht. But I think for everyone else, do more what they did last night. Work the ball down low, go inside out if you are going to take a bunch of threes, but work that advantage down low. I do think Tennessee is going to have an interior advantage in this game to get offensive rebounds, to get Adu going early in it. And I think that Rick Barnes last night was sort of a warm-up for that. In his halftime interview or during his in-game interview, he said, we want to make sure that we're still dominating this part of the court right here. And he was putting his hand around and drawing a circle around the goal and saying, we want to keep doing that throughout the night. I think that's a preview of what's more to come in this regional. And I think it's a preview of the Texas game of what Tennessee wants to try to do in this one.
Chad, great stuff. Enjoy the contest this weekend, and good luck with your brackets. Great to catch up with you, and we'll maybe check in next week and see if the balls are still around.
Yeah, Willie, great hearing from you. D-Mace, always good talking to you. I'm enjoying the tournament. I know you guys are as well, and we'll chat soon.
All right. Chad Withrow, Hot Mite with Hutton and Withrow. You hear his colleague every week on our show, Jonathan Hutton. Chad joins Jared every week on his show. So great to catch up with Chad. It's a very exciting finish going on right now between Northwestern and Florida Atlantic. Florida Atlantic in the 8-9 game after being in the Final Four last year, got in basically as a bubble team, and we've got a review. It's going to take forever. Gene Serator is going to come on the microphone. It's hard to tell who the ball went off of. This is what's going on right now. We'll tell you what's going on, but FAU leads 58-56 with 27 seconds to go. Whose ball is it? We'll tell you when we come back. Stay tuned. We're coming back. We'll have our Take It to the Bank at 1:45, so stick with us for that. I feel like Nick Frazier is channeling this to the Kentucky fans. Take a deep breath. Hang in there. Every little thing's going to be all right. Just go with it. It's okay. The sun will come up. Life will go on, whether Cal stays or goes. A little Bob Marley, just to take it down a notch. My bracket was ruined because of Kentucky. I'm over it. I'm really not over it, but I'm telling myself that I'm over it.
All right, man, that was one lazy shot by
yes, it was.
The Florida Atlanta player. Like, it was 5 seconds left. Score was Northwestern was down 2 points, Florida Atlantic. The refs almost messed up the game for everybody.
And so we're going to talk about that in a minute. But Northwestern and Florida Atlantic are going to OT, 58 all. It's been a grinder. It's been hard to score. We didn't think anybody was going to get to 20 for a long time. They barely got to 20 at the half. And it hadn't been a whole lot easier in the second half. But they had a weird call, and it had us kind of talking about what you should do. They had a call where the ref mistakenly called a guy out of bounds that wasn't out of bounds.
Clearly he wasn't
and
out of bounds.
And it wasn't, you weren't sure who the ball was off of, and they went to review and they realized they had screwed it up and they called a jump ball. But instead of actually tipping it up at half court, they went with the possession arrow. So that, it's very randomly, the ball went back to Florida Atlantic. Now, Northwestern lived to tell about it because they got a stop and then they went out and really did a great job making a drive to the basket to tie it. And then, as you mentioned, Florida Atlantic came down. The guy waited way too long and didn't. He just tried to jack it up. He just stopped. He didn't attack the basket at all. It was a terrible shot to try to win it in regulation. He thought he was going to be the hero, but they were like,
one
shiny
moment.
We're not having this.
He wanted to be on the replay. He got it blocked. Like, dude, you got to be aggressive going to the basket.
But I think that's a really interesting rule question in the review process. Now Northwestern's gotten the first two buckets of overtime. They're off to a good start. But I think in a dispute where the referee basically messes up, why not just jump it up instead of go with the possession arrow? With that little time left, if it's less than a minute to go, I wonder if they should look at that. Because it's not a tie-up. A jump ball is a tie-up where you and me are going for the ball, and it's, you know, we both have it. That's where you use the possession arrow. Mm-hmm. But if it's a messed up call by the ref, let's jump it up.
Jump it up, yeah, because that clearly the Florida Atlantic guy wasn't out of bounds. He was a foot from the out of bounds line.
It wasn't close.
It wasn't even close. And then the ref called him out of bounds. And then subsequently, Northwestern gets the ball, but then they're out of bounds, but they had already stopped the play. Then they go back to the replay, and they're watching it for about 5 minutes, and then they determine, oh, it was a jump ball, possession Florida Atlantic. No, it should be a jump ball in the middle of the court. Y'all almost messed up the game for both teams.
That is for sure.
Gosh, refs, get out the way. You are there to not be seen, okay? Or heard. Just make your calls.
They're lucky that the game went to overtime, or else that would have been a big point of contention for Northwestern fans. But now, Northwestern up three with the ball, 3:33 to go in overtime. The other scores, Baylor in full command. They have not really been challenged at all by Colgate, 86-64 Bears with Scott Drew's crew. San Diego State 31, UAB 24, 3:26 to go in the first. Northwestern just hit another dagger. It's now 65-59. You can see the Big Ten fever coming out of D-Mace here.
I picked Northwestern.
See, I had Florida Atlantic. This is not good for me. Marquette leading Western 25-15 with about 9 minutes to go in the first half. Coming up next will be Stetson, the Hatters, 16 seed against number one UConn. That ought to be interesting. UConn is a 27-point favorite in that one. New Mexico versus Clemson, Yale, Auburn. Colorado against Florida. That'll be an interesting matchup. We'll see what Florida brings to the table. A good performance by them at the SEC tournament. Texas A&M, speaking of that, gets Nebraska in another 9-8 game. Vermont and Duke, Grambling, Purdue, Charleston, Alabama, Longwood, Houston, and let's see, James Madison against Wisconsin, TCU, Utah State, Grand Canyon, St. Mary's. That's the last game, and so that will probably be the last one. And we will take it to the bank here in just a few minutes.
So, Willie,
on those games.
So, Willie, I mentioned a call to you.
Pick one or two of those.
That from the Kansas and Samford game, it was second half.
Yeah, see, I didn't see this.
Yeah, you didn't see this. Second half, there was maybe a minute left in the game, somewhere
under
around
a
there.
Under
a minute left. Yeah, the block. Kansas has basically a breakaway. They get the ball up the court off a rebound, get the ball up the court. Guys run down the court. Samford guy makes a hustle play. Kansas guy goes up to dunk the ball. Samford guy comes from behind him, gets all ball, knocks it out of the way. It would have been a sort of fast break in a sense going back the other way had they let it stand in play. They would have had an advantage going back the other way. The guy goes up to dunk the ball. He grabs the rim, falls. He falls awkwardly. And the ref, not based upon the actual block, but he called a foul based upon the guy falling. At least that's what I'm thinking, because there's no way anybody can see that that wasn't a foul. He got all ball. His body didn't even touch the guy. He got all ball blocked. They called a foul on Samford. Ultimately, Samford loses the game. And, you know, that's the first question asked. Even the announcers were like, listen, that is not a foul. What in the hell is he seeing? They didn't say hell. But what is he looking
at? I'm looking at it right now. This is the first time I've seen
it. It is not a foul. No. That's a situation where they should be, just like we talked about with this game, that's a situation where you should be able to go back.
And review that?
And review it. The last minute of the game or 2 minutes of the game, you should be able to go back and look at a foul, whether it was truly a foul or not. Because now what they're doing, they're not necessarily looking at the foul. They're looking at how guys land.
Yeah.
You know, if a guy grabs his head or if a guy grabs his arm or something like that and it seems like he's been hit or something, then they're calling fouls based upon the player's reaction, not actually based upon the play.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. In the NBA, you can challenge.
You can challenge
and
that.
And say,
yes,
that wasn't a foul.
Absolutely.
But you can't do it in college. You can't. Right?
And my thing is,
you can review whether it's a flagrant foul and all that stuff, but you can't say that was all ball.
And my thing is, don't make it like throughout the whole game, just the last 2 minutes of each half.
And maybe one challenge.
Exactly. We can go back and
look. You challenge everything, but you have one challenge in your back pocket that you could challenge a player.
Absolutely.
Like that.
Or,
I wouldn't mind that.
Or the league, you know, the league, whoever's watching the game, they come and they buzz in and say, hey, listen, you may want to look at that one. Because there's no way.
That's an interesting one. The eye in the sky says, hey, we need to look at this again.
There's no way that should have been a foul. That may have cost Samford the game because they would have had a 4-on-5
Going back the other way because the Kansas guy wiped out.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. I had Samford, too. Wait a minute. We need to have a rule change. We need to go back and do this over.
This
by the way,
Northwestern
has now gone up by 10 in the overtime
over
with
now.
1:30 to go. Wow.
I hope it's over.
John L. Davis, who was a hero last year when they went to the Final Four, he had the chance at the last shot. He just didn't. He stopped his momentum. He didn't attack the basket. And as it turns out, that's probably going to be their one chance to win it. They made a great comeback late. Mm-hmm. To take the lead against Northwestern. They had been behind most of the game.
56 that took the lead.
Yeah, and then Northwestern hit a driving layup to tie it, and they have dominated the overtime thus far. Wow. So we've got some things. I feel like, though, D-Mace, as we kind of start thinking about the next segment and take it to the bank, we haven't had that upheaval yet. We had the Oakland win.
Yes.
But there hasn't been that other big upset. I feel like there's going to be another big upset later today. I feel like there's another big one up there somewhere.
I'm not really talking about like a
12-5. I'm talking about one of those big
ones. Are you going to go out on
14,
a limb and say
15.
Who that one's going to be? Or you're like, nah, I'm not going there. I just think it's going to be an upset.
When I say that, I don't have a particular team in mind.
Uh-huh.
I don't. I just feel like the odds are. Just the way the tournament is played, and just like the kid last night that hit 10 threes, there's going to be another guy like that. Or a team that just goes ice cold at the wrong time.
So you think, how about UConn and Stetson?
No.
I don't think it'll be Houston and Longwood.
No. No.
You don't think
no
it's
way.
That? Okay, let me give you another game.
What about like Vermont against Duke? Duke's 12.5-point favorite. I don't think Grambling – I watched Grambling's game. I don't think they can bother Purdue. I could be wrong.
What about UAB San Diego State?
No, well, I pick San Diego State now, and that's a 12-5.
Yeah,
that's
I
not
San
a
Diego
huge,
State. So
UAB winning? You know, that's a –
I pick San
happen.
Diego State, yeah.
San Diego State is going to take
the lead.
How about
Auburn, Yale?
Some, you know, who was it? Was it Seth Davis or one of those guys when the first brackets were announced on that Sunday? He said, oh. Watch out. I like Yale.
Yeah, they're shooting almost 35% from the three-point line.
Yale won the Ivy League. It was a pretty deep Ivy League. It was a buzzer beater in the last game that got Yale in there. I'll be surprised. I'm not feeling that. I'm not feeling that. I think Auburn's got it. So I don't know who it's going to be. It's not anybody I really picked. Like, as I'm looking at the games, I have James Madison, but that's everybody – Not everybody. A lot of people are picking James Madison.
I'm sure a lot of people are picking Grand Canyon.
Grand Canyon's
over
about a 5.5-point dog. That's not a huge upset. Even if one or two of those.
Alabama win. Charleston.
I will say this. Alabama.
I pick Charleston. Now.
Alabama can have the bad game because they shoot so many threes. If they have an off game and they don't play great defense, I would say. So I think a Charleston, if they're hot, could hang with Alabama. That's just my thought. So that would be one to watch. Now, is that a huge upset? I'd say a 13 is legit.
Yeah. 13
so maybe not
a
Cinderella.
Four?
Yeah, I guess we're out
well,
of it.
That'd be
I
an
guess
upset.
The 15s are done, right? We've got a couple 16s that are playing here, but you know, the big, big one that is historic, I guess the best we've got is the 14. I don't think anybody besides Oakland as a 14 or higher is gonna win. Unless the 16 wins, right? The 15s are done. Unless Western comes in. Now, Western is still in the game. They're playing Marquette, and they're right in it. They're down 3 with 7 minutes to go in the first half. So maybe that's the one.
Yeah.
And Jonathan Hutton did say he was calling for Western. Nick remembers that. He's nodding his head.
What about Wisconsin James Madison? Did you say that one?
I We talked about the 12 fives on the show yesterday. I'm taking both of the 12s, or at least I took them in my bracket, James Madison and Grand Canyon. Now, you're saying, Willie, didn't you finish last in the pool last year?
Exactly.
Yes, I did. Willie, did you have Kentucky going to the final this year? Yes, I did.
So you're finishing last again.
So maybe go opposite. Maybe when I take it to the bank, you go opposite. That might be the way to go. That might be the way to go. All right, it's 72-61 Northwestern over Florida Atlantic. It looks like Northwestern is going to get to the finish line here and win in overtime. So Chris Collins and the Wildcats representing the Big Ten. We will take our final timeout, and we will come back and take it to the bank when we come back. So keep it right here on 102.5 The Game. It is time to take it to the bank. Wrapping up the week. I'm just wondering, Nick, by the way, our Take It to the Bank segment brought to you, as always, by FNM Bank. Go to myfmbank.com to find the nearest location. Banking made easy on purpose. Has Caroline texted any Take
It
to the Bank?
She did not, and this is why I'm going to talk to the committee and ask, what shall we do this week?
Zero. She gets a zero.
A zero. Okay. D-May, she okay with that? Caroline, get a zero?
Hey, she's not here?
This is true. She's not even here to accept her award. Because I am about to unveil season one.
Now, we'll give her some time later today. If she wants to text you, we'll accept that.
Okay.
We'll accept that. Let's see if it dawns on her. She may be having just too much fun. But D-May's were just wondering. We were wondering, Nick, you can weigh in on this. Could she possibly be having more fun than we are? This week, we've had a great time.
I don't know.
This week, we've had a lot of laughs on the show. So, Caroline chose to take the vacation during the March Madness. That's her prerogative. And maybe she's having the time of her life. Maybe.
I think we're
having a good time here.
I think we are drawing from her energy.
I think we're drawing from her energy. Maybe so.
Because she's having fun, so we kind of picking that up because she's the third sort of like triangle.
Yeah.
Third point of the triangle. So, we're pulling in from her energy from where she's at. So thank you, Caroline, because we know you're having a lot of fun.
We will discuss on Monday.
I don't think she's having as much fun as we are. I mean, we're ending the week on hash brown casserole, cornbread.
Yes. She missed the hash brown casserole.
Yes. I mean, D Mace, I have to get your thoughts before we go to Take It to the Bank. Like, are you okay?
Hash brown casserole.
Nashville, he has been adopted as a true Southerner now with this hash brown
casserole. With a little cornbread, too?
It's over.
That's my cornbread.
Game over. And you know the thing you said with Chad Withrow? You said hot sauce and not ketchup.
Oh, yeah, put a little hot sauce on there, man. No ketchup. And I understand Chad. He don't like the little hot stuff. I get it. It ain't made for some people. But me, being from the D, you see how that rhyme? Me being from the D, I like my hot sauce, man.
Okay.
I like my hot sauce.
Okay.
Or Cholula.
You know,
Red Hot, whatever you want to use.
Anything.
Exactly.
All right, we got to point this out. Speaking of Red Hot, the Hilltoppers of Western Kentucky on a 15-5 run, they just went up by three. Marquette just came back with a hoop. Mm-hmm. Western has taken the lead, the 15 seed. So I was just saying that I feel like there's another big one. Western might be the one. Let's see. Marquette is having all kinds of trouble guarding them right now. So Western Kentucky fans, they have perked up. So maybe some of you Kentucky fans that are kind of Western fans a little bit on the side, you can jump on this bandwagon full throttle. Full throttle. What's their name? Is it the Big Red, the mascot?
The Hilltoppers, yeah.
Well, the Hilltoppers, the mascot's a funny
guy. Yeah, Big Red, I believe.
Big Red,
name,
right?
Yeah.
So
the giant blob.
He's the blob. He is the blob.
Yep. So right. Northwestern has moved on. They've eliminated Florida Atlantic. They won 77-65, so that's good for me because my bracket is still intact somewhat. So, Northwestern, the Cats are moving on.
Western is now up by – they just made a steal, and they're about to hit a three. It is now 39-33. They're up
you
six.
Called it, didn't you?
They're attacking.
Well, oh, no, you're looking at it on looking your computer, at, yeah.
My computer was a little ahead of our TV. San Diego State leading UAB 35-29 at the half. Stetson and UConn are underway. And as D-May said, Northwestern defeats Florida Atlantic 77-65 in overtime. They outscored them 19-7 in the OT. And Baylor whips Colgate 92-67. All right, Nick. The Take It to the Bank. What did we have last week?
Well, I'm now recapping the winners of season one.
So season one. So are we starting season two?
Season two is today.
Because
technically,
so
opening
Caroline
day,
is starting with a zero. That's great. We're going to take the lead, D-Mace.
There you go. Exactly.
I like this.
I will say,
I take any advantage I can.
I did say the white flag last week. I added a Mookie Betts home run for the season two of Take It to the Bank.
Yeah, you did say that.
That did happen, by the way. He hit the first home run of the season.
He had a huge weekend. Yeah. Or not weekend. He had two-game series over there. Yeah.
Incredible. And so with that, Mookie Betts to lead that off of things. But Caroline is the winner of season one of Ticket to the Bank. Final standing numbers here. Caroline at the top with 147. Derek at 136. Willie made a good effort late run there, 121. And then myself at 95 at the bottom. So this could be.
I did end on a high note, didn't
you
I?
You did. Yeah, you I had got a hot streak.
I got mine last week, didn't I?
You did. You did.
Okay. Yeah. So I feel good about how I finished. I had a terrible start.
Feeling good.
Season. Too big of a hole. I'm glad we're resetting here.
Yeah, I like your mojo, Willie. With that, you can start us. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. I'm just going to stick with my brackets. And as good, as bad as they've been, I just got to stick with it. I'm going to go, and I said it on the air earlier this week, I'm going to go with the 2-12 seeds tonight. James Madison and Grand Canyon to pull the upsets. And I could kind of play it down the middle and say they'll both cover. But no, no. I picked him in the brackets, and I'm going to pick him straight up. James Madison over Wisconsin, Grand Canyon, and Bryce Drew over the Gales of St. Mary. Boom.
All right. Let me start with the red hot, the best team in the NHL, the Nashville Predators. They will score at least three goals versus the Red Wings, my beloved Red Wings. Josi will have one of those goals.
Okay.
And I'm gonna call them the Broadway Bouncers.
The Broadway Bouncers.
Broadway Bouncers will have at least 1 point.
Okay, so their line will get
their line will get a goal.
Okay,
they will get 1 point.
Sherwood, McCarron, and Smith.
Mm-hmm.
The line that we've been trying to name all week that we've been workshopping. This has emerged today. The Broadway Bouncers.
Yes. That's what I am
calling. They'll get one.
Mm-hmm.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good formula.
I have breaking news from the Caroline Fenton.
Oh, she
saw the time. She's not that. She must not be having fun. She's thinking about the show.
In all capital letters. Take it to the bank? Question mark? It just hit me. Am I too late? Please. Am I too late?
Say yes. She's too late.
She may not get a zero.
Here she goes. Her pick. Philip Forsberg. 2 points tomorrow and the proper gloat of her Auburn Tigers to win.
Okay.
That was her pick. So that is Caroline at the buzzer.
She did say Auburn. She did last week say Auburn would win the SEC tournament. That was a good call.
So, D-Mace already went, which he got his Broadway Bouncers.
Bouncers.
I love that name. It's a good little name.
We're going to make it stick.
You guys are get the marketing out. Let's see if it sticks.
As for myself this week, opening day is next week. So, before, you know, next Friday, we'll have all the games play out. I'm going to go with, this is tough, but I'm going to go with some home runs. O'Neill Cruz, he's back from his injuries in Pittsburgh. Take O'Neill Cruz to get a home run. And you know what? Let's go with over in total. I'll look this number up in the MLB for starting pitchers to have over 103 strikeouts for opening day pitchers next week. That is what I'm going to go with there. I know that's
okay. You're going to have to do some math, and that is your department. We'll just take what you get because that sounds like a chore to add all those numbers up.
It'd be something fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got it.
But there we go. And as for that, we will take it over to Willie.
Western Kentucky on a haymaker right now. They have punched Marquette in the mouth. 18-3 run. 40 seconds to go in the first half. Western leads Marquette, the two seed, 43-34. The Hilltoppers on a roll. Good grief.
Come on, Marquette.
They are just blowing by. They trailed early in this game. This is one to keep your eye on for sure. Jared Stillman is coming up, Stillman and Company. Teron is here, so he'll be there. Everybody have a great weekend. I'll see you in Smashville tomorrow. Red Wings in town. That is going to be awesome. Can the Predators get to 17? We shall see. It's going to be an awesome weekend. Everybody be safe, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
Be love, love on your people. Have a wonderful and safe weekend. Peace.